Hello and welcome to the Work Like a Laker podcast. I'm your host, Megan Rickson, and today I am joined by my co-host, Grace Joaquin.
Hi, everyone.
And today we have a very special guest joining us. Caitlin Horrocks is a professor here at GVSU in writing, and she is also here to talk about becoming a published author. Caitlin has written two story collections, Life Among the Terranauts and This Is Not Your City, as well as a novel, The Vexations, which the Wall Street Journal named as one of the 10 best books of 2019. So hi, Caitlin. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're really excited to talk to you.
Yes.
As you're going to hear over and over, Grace and I love reading.
Yes. And we're very geeked out about this episode.
Yes.
And I'm extra excited because I think I mentioned this in an email, but I actually took your class when I was a student here. And I want to say you mentioned it was like one of your first or second years of teaching and you were wonderful. It was such a fun class. It was a gen ed and it was, I don't remember the exact name, but it was like Introduction to Creative Writing or something like that. And I loved it. And so we thought you might want to first just start by describing or letting us know a few of the classes you teach so that if any student listening wants to take some of your classes, they know what to look for.
Absolutely. So it would have been Writing 219,
okay.
WRT 219, Intro to Creative Writing. It's a class we try to make fun. It fulfills the arts requirement for general education. It's a mixed genre class. So you're experimenting with writing fiction, poetry, creative nonfiction, it's a really like generative creative class. Trying out different things, techniques, mm-hmm. ideas, working with different ways to get ideas and brainstorm and bounce ideas off each other, really like fun creative space. So highly recommend to anyone.
Yes.
Once you've taken 219, that's the prereq to a lot of the other courses I teach. I teach 300 and 400 level classes in fiction and creative nonfiction. In the writing department, I also teach editing and publishing courses.
Mm.
We offer a lot of other courses in different types of creative writing and also, business, technical, professional writing.
Well, I can personally recommend Caitlin as an instructor and also now as an author. Megan and I read a couple of your books. Megan, do you want to share what you read?
Yeah, I read your most recent work, Life Among the Terranauts, and I have to say I loved it. I typically don't read short story collections, but this pushed me out of my comfort zone and I really, really liked the format, and I thought they were well written, and it was just, kind of super fun to have a bunch of different stories with a bunch of different characters to read about.
And I was saying, I read This Is Not Your City, which is also a short story collection, and was it your first published book, I believe?
Yes.
And I was saying the same thing to Megan, where I also don't often read short stories, because I think for me, I'm always worried that it's too short, I won't get pulled into it, since it's so short. But with yours, I feel like immediately each story could have been a full-length novel, and I really just like got pulled into the characters, and the stories are all very layered, and like you feel so many emotions. And so what inspired you to start your journey as an author?
I just want to say how thrilled I am that we're talking about like short stories.
Yay!
I think, most fiction readers gravitate more towards novels. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we grow up mm-hmm. with. And there is just something sort of so deliciously immersive about a great, wonderful, big novel. But I love short stories as a writer and as a reader. And it's always like really special for me, for a reader who maybe doesn't usually read short stories, to read mine and, find them satisfying, find them rewarding. I'll acknowledge, I think the worry or the frustration with the form is that you do just get these sort of short glimpses, mm-hmm. and then you get like booted out at mm-hmm. the end. I find them really enjoyable and rewarding.
And it looks like you have your two short story collections, but you also have a lot of stories that are published elsewhere as well.
Yeah.
And
thinking about that, author, journey, towards becoming an author. I definitely, as a kid, I was just a huge reader, like very classic bookworm. And I think the two things that I was finding that were most important to me about the books I was reading as a kid was that sense of escape. Mm. You know, whether it was fantasy or more realist fiction, just entering into another life and another world. And having those moments of recognition, whether or not the character was like really, you know, like me in mm-hmm. obvious ways. Mm-hmm. I loved that. And it would have been a dream to like be the person creating those experiences. But it just never seemed at all realistic to me. Like I you know, if you, the saying, you know, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? I mean, to me, like saying a writer would have been like saying like a mermaid, right. or I mean, like ballerina,
right?
I just something that was either totally implausible or like, you know, not really, you know, going to happen for 99.9% of the people out there. But I just didn't stop writing. I still knew that I loved it. I still knew that I cared about it. So I would do it in class. I would, you know, sign up for a class if it was available. If there was like a creative option for an assignment, I would take it. And I just didn't quit. I kept writing through college afterwards, ended up going to graduate school for writing, which is not, there is no one, credential path or mm-hmm. educational path that a writer needs. I mean, there's an infinite number of ways to be a writer. For me, grad school was helpful. And one of the ways in which it was helpful, I mean, it was helpful in terms of what I was doing in the classroom, but also helpful in just being surrounded by people who just also hadn't stopped.
Yeah.
Who were like, you know, like, okay, you know, I care about this. So let's own the fact I care about it and try and get better and try and just sort of commit to it and see where it goes. And that was kind of finally the moment where I was like, all right, you know, stop pretending that this is purely a hobby you're going to like set aside.
Yeah. Well, and I like what you said about like just fully committing to it. I think and admitting to yourself that this is like the path that you're on, because I'm sure that's probably something that a lot of writers have to sort of contend with, is getting over that hurdle of
I can try this.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll fail, but I can try.
Yeah. I think that relationship with like trying and failure, I think I realized that I was waiting a really long time for permission.
Mm.
Like I thought that the only way that I would get to call myself a writer is if somebody like sort of tapped me on the shoulder and was like, you know, you're good. You're good enough. Uh-huh. Like you're not going to fail. Like this is what you should be doing.
Right.
And there's no, I mean, that's probably not going to happen. there's nobody out there who's going to do that for you, partly because you will fail at some point.
Yeah.
And partly because just you need to be the person to give yourself permission.
I love that. That's great. So can you talk us through a little bit of the process of getting your first book published? What that looked
sure.
like?
Sure. So my first book was even more of a roller coaster than the normal publication process and kind of weird in certain ways. So I'll talk about that. But then it was a more typical process for the next two books. And mm-hmm. I can briefly mm-hmm. talk about that.
Great.
I was finishing grad school with a sort of pile of short stories. I was working on a novel, but had what I felt was a decent collection of short stories. Because there tend to be fewer readers for short stories, a lot of story collections aren't published by like the big publishing houses. They're published by smaller mm-hmm, places.
Mm-hmm.
Good and bad of that. There isn't as much money, there isn't as much reach, there isn't as much publicity generally for those books. But they are easier to approach, those publishers. You don't need an agent, you just like send the manuscript in to the press during like an open submission period or during a contest. So I started sending the manuscript out to sort of different presses and contests, and then also publishing stories in magazines. There's this whole like ecosystem of online and print magazines that publish fiction, poetry, nonfiction, art, photography. While I was sending out the collection, an agent saw one of those stories that I had published and reached out to me and asked, like, what are you working on? What else do you have? And I said, well, I have this collection of stories. And she's like, uh-huh. And then I said, I'm also working on a novel. And then she's like, ah, okay.
Ooh, I like you now.
So we signed with an agent preemptively or mm-hmm. Prematurely a little bit. You know, she was normally an agent is only interested if you have something kind of ready to sell, because that's when they make their money, when they sell a manuscript to a publisher. She sort of had me in a holding pattern waiting for me to finish this novel. I got a phone call that the collection won one of the contests I'd entered with a small press. I was, you know, very excited. I was, yay, I have a book coming out.
Yeah.
Since I did have an agent, she sort of came in at the back end to look at the contract and do some sort of coordinating with the press. And months passed, and she was the one to kind of sound the first alarm, saying, you know, like, I'm not getting replies to questions. I'm not getting responses to emails. Like, I don't think this contract was ever even countersigned. Mm. Like, could you try and figure out, like, what's going on there? Because this is, like, ringing some alarm bells for me. And what was happening, it was a university press whose existence was in a lot of peril due to, like, state budget cuts and politicking. So there was this really extended period where it was like, oh, maybe they're being shut down. Maybe they're not. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. And then the outcome was that it would survive just long enough. My book would be the last book they ever published.
Mm. Oh, my God.
Turn out the lights and shut the door.
Wow.
Most of the staff had been let go at this point. There was sort of one person left. And I, at that point, I got different types of advice about what to do. You know, some people were, you know, go ahead and let them publish it. You know, at least you have a book out there with your name on it. You know, that's going to make your teaching career more secure. Mm-hmm. I was at Grand Valley at that point. And other people are like, you know, this is not, when you think about what you want a publisher to do for you in terms of help getting your work out there and helping it reach readers, you know, this situation is not going to be able to give you that. Like, you might as well, at that point, you might as well self-publish because
sure.
Your publisher is not a meaningful partner at this point. So I made the decision to pull the book. And went from having a book coming out to having nothing coming out. Which was a really hard decision, but it was 1,000 times the right one.
Okay.
Because the book, so the book made the rounds of some other bigger publishers. You know, my agent did sort of try some big places. And you figure you're just going to hear like, you know, no, not for me. No, mm-hmm. thanks. And instead we got these lovely, they were rejections, but they were like, oh, you know, well, we loved this, but you know, we can't make the numbers work. We don't think it's going to earn enough money or, mm-hmm. you know, oh, we love this, but we've already published a short story collection mm-hmm. by like a young female writer, this, mm-hmm. you know, this coming year. It was, you know, all these factors where you can like the work and still not get to yes. So it ended up with a small press, a small nonprofit literary press based in Louisville, Kentucky. Not all publishing is New York. Called Saraband Books, and they did a beautiful job with it. Nice. And it got a lot of, you know, just great critical attention and readership, kind of beyond my expectations, or I think beyond their expectations. and it really was this sort of great. You know, not every publishing story has a happy ending, but for me, this kind of vote of confidence in it mattered that I believed in the work, that I really wanted the best for the book, that I didn't want the book to just come out as quickly as possible mm-hmm. in whatever form it could, mm-hmm. that it was kind of worth waiting and believing in my work enough to try and do right by it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Sounds brave, but
yes.
You made the right decision.
Roller coaster.
Yeah. Well, and so you mentioned that it wasn't obviously, which we've heard of, not a typical way that a book gets published. Are your other two books published by the same press?
press or publisher. I would have been, I would be happy to work with them again. They were great. My second two books were with a different publisher, Little Brown. At that point, I had an agent. I had a different agent because the first one had just left the business to do other things, which happens a lot. You realize there's a lot of turnover in publishing and like all roles and levels. Just sold, I had been working on a novel, a different novel than I had been working on at the beginning. I switched gears. He circulated a novel and a story collection, a second story collection, Life Among the Terranauts.
Okay, yeah.
So the Vexations and Life Among the Terranauts sold as a two-book deal.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So, yeah. That's awesome.
Very cool.
And with that, what have you found to be the most challenging part of being an author, whether that's the publishing or some other aspect? And what's the most rewarding part?
It probably is. It's publishing related in a few different ways. And one way is just kind of separating the writing from the publishing. Because the writing, you know, you hope that it's a space of like play and creativity and yeah. exploration. And if something, you know, you want something to feel kind of fresh and surprising, and you need to be able to find that for yourself as a writer. And if you get too concerned about, you know, what's going to sell, or, you know, writing something that's like the thing that just sold a bunch of copies, yeah. You can tie yourself in knots, and you're not necessarily, you know, the work might feel too calculated or stale. Mm-hmm. So just sort of trying to keep those two spheres separate, I think, mm-hmm. is important but challenging. And then another challenge that I didn't realize, I think, before I started publishing is, you know, the finish line does often recede or things fall apart. There's just a lot of different ways for things to not work out the way you hope. And then sometimes they do. I don't want this to seem too gloomy, but I just remember thinking like, oh, well, the minute you get an agent, like that's where you have it made. Like yeah. that's that you're fine.
Someone's working for you now.
You're safe. Yeah.
They've got you.
Yeah. And in practice, you know, an agent can represent your book and fail to sell it. Or the agent can drop you, or, you know, the agent can just go do something else. Or, you know, the agent sells your book to an editor who then leaves their job and your yeah. book is kind of orphaned at the press. There's a lot of moving parts, mm-hmm. and there's many, many ways for something to kind of not go the way you hope, or somebody else gets the thing you wanted, or somebody. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of potential moments, you know, for jealousy or for envy.
Yeah.
So I think just, you know, sort of just trying to keep your head on straight, mm-hmm. and keep your head down and control what you can, you know, give up what you can't.
Right.
And then also, you know, foster genuine kind of. You know, being able to just be happy for other writers, be, you know, free in your admiration if somebody gets something you would have liked, you know, was that book good? If it was, then good for them.
Yeah.
And just kind of holding on to that.
It sounds like there's a lot of potential heartbreak, but also a lot of joy, right? But because even I think about yeah. authors who talk about, I know that they don't often get to choose their cover, for example, and there's just a lot out of your control, and you have to sort of just have faith that it will work out how it's supposed to, or
yeah.
good people will have your book in their hands.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, there are those horror stories about like titles or covers. And I'll just say, I feel like I've been really lucky.
Yeah.
In that, the people I've worked with have been really receptive to my opinions or my thoughts. I felt like it really was always a partnership. Like it was always a very collaborative relationship rather than adversarial. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think some, you know, because publishing can involve gatekeeping or heartbreak, I think sometimes people are then kind of, you know, overly steeled that they think they're going to get into a bunch of fights where someone's trying to change their words mm-hmm. or change their vision. And that can happen, but it's not the norm.
Oh, that's good to hear.
So that the partnerships of publishing have been something rewarding. And then maybe the two kind of most rewarding things, it's, you know, interactions with readers are so special. Mm-hmm. Whether that's like, you know, in person after mm-hmm. an event, or, you know, just an email you get, or just, you know, anything where you realize like you've made that connection
yeah.
with somebody.
It's really happening. People are actually reading it.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. And so, you know, I wrote this thing, yes. you know, on my, you know,
spent
computer on
time.
My porch,
yes.
and now it's like out there yes. and mean something to somebody.
So
and
cool. yeah.
And yeah, that, I mean, that's magic. That never gets old. Maybe the other sort of most rewarding. Can there be two most rewarding
yeah,
things?
I think so.
Sure.
We'll let you.
I guess there's sort of an outward one and an inward one. Just like the satisfaction of, writing. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of just like moving, you know, pixels around on a screen talking about imaginary people. You
yeah.
know, it's very ephemeral and amorphous, and just kind of sitting with something where you've just been, you know, poking at the character and rearranging the words for a long time and trying to really sort of get a scene right, or get a moment right, or just get like a sentence right, and kind of reading it back over and feeling like, yeah, like I did it, like I did the thing I wanted to do.
Yes.
And that's really, really satisfying.
Awesome. Awesome. So what advice would you give, or do you already give, to students who want to be published, who are maybe just starting to consider what that might be like?
Something I feel strongly about is that the goal is not just like to get published.
Right.
The goal is to publish work you feel good about, in a venue that you feel good about being in, partnered with people who are going to do more for your work than you can do for yourself. There are sort of so many, there's a million tiny online magazines. There's a million self-publishing tools. It's not actually that hard to just get your work out there in some form or another.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in pursuing traditional publication or, different publishing options, just being really sort of patient and really confident and giving your work the respect and the time that it takes to really think about, what makes sense for this book or this project for me, who's really going to be able to do right by this and help mm-hmm. it reach readers that, I can't reach by myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. great advice. And sort of along with that, you teach writing. So what advice or what tips do you have to make something, you mentioned you want people to put writing out that they're proud of. That's their best, what would you give for advice on how to make good writing?
Sure. So, a question that I think we should always ask ourselves about a creative project, probably not at the first draft. I think if you asked this from the very beginning, it would be kind of creatively paralyzing. but maybe at some point, maybe you have a draft down and you're working on the revision process. How is this the story that only you can write? Or how is this the essay or the poem that only you can write? And I think it does sometimes feel like a scary question whenever you pose it. If it's a memoir, maybe the answer seems, pretty obvious. It's this thing that happened to me, and it happened to me and nobody else. So, that's what makes this mine. But with other genres, you think about, how is this the story that only I can write? How is it, generally, we're writing, we're inspired by the things that we've already enjoyed and already loved, but we don't want to just replicate it. Mm-hmm. We want to put our own spin on it. Mm-hmm. So thinking about, how is this, what is it that I do and that I do well and that I'm proud of, and how am I bringing that to the page?
Right. Great. Yeah, that's such helpful advice. We really, really appreciate you being here, Caitlin. Thank you so much. And hopefully everybody was just inspired by this conversation. I know I was. And we'll be sure to include some of Caitlin's book recs in our show notes. So definitely check those out. We'll, of course, also include links to her books, which, just so you can remember what these are, is Life Among the Terranauts, This Is Not Your City, and The Mix. Vexation. So be sure to check those out. And now I'd just like to thank everyone for listening, and we hope you tune in to a future episode soon.